Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Good morning. It is War Room Impeachment, the 18th of November, the year of our Lord, 2019, episode 34. Here with Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller. We're live in the John Fredericks Radio Network, now picked up today nationwide by the Salem Radio Network. I want to thank our friends live streaming. You can see us, our lovely visages, on americasvoice.net. Also with many, many of the largest independent stations throughout the country we'll get to momentarily. Raheem Kassam, the two gentlemen, Raheem and Jason, are the two best guys in the world to run war rooms. Raheem Kassam was Nigel Farage's wingman and is one of the gentlemen that set the war room up, that brought along Brexit. Not that the UK's out yet, but we'll get into more of that later in the week. And they're getting there. Jason Miller was a chief communications strategist for Trump 2016, the greatest comeback, come from behind victory. It started when Jason arrived in American political history and was the transitions communication director. Two gentlemen that know how to run a war room. And that's what we do here. We have a war room with surrogates, rapid response, polling, and this show is daily, 7 days a week, and oftentimes with bonus sessions. We have a bonus session tonight at 6, and the rest of the week, 5 p.m., as it's, I guess, playoff week, as we have all the different personalities we'll get to momentarily coming in. And so we started this, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? It's now nationwide. And the reason is people need a war room. You saw yesterday in the New York Times had a very large article in the Sunday Times about the conservative movement, the grassroots movement coming together. Americans for Prosperity, Club for Growth, Tea Party Patriots, Freedom Works, Citizens United, all the big grassroots organizations coming together to support President Trump. We are going to be live here 7 days a week, as we are at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States. Before I turn to my two colleagues, and we do a reset here because I think it's very important to do a reset, I want to introduce Congressman Jim Banks from Indiana 3. He is a Naval Reserve officer, a member of Congress, and the reason I follow Congressman Banks is that he is at the leading edge of this fight against the Chinese Communist Party and what it means for our world. Today, the Dow futures are up 11. Dow's at 28,000. Insane prosperity here in the United States. The lowest unemployment ever. The wages starting to rise, particularly among working class people in the lower middle class under President Trump's economic program, which was basically deconstruct the administrative state, unlock the animal spirits, turn back to financial entrepreneurial capitalism. And at the heart of that is the manufacturing base of this country. And, of course, we had Senator Braun in here last week from Indiana. And the reason we love Indiana, the heartland of this country, is that this is the common sense, hardworking folks. America is the most decent, most common sense, got the most grit of any nation in the world. And as the world is on fire from Hong Kong to Beirut to Chile to now Iran, the stability of the United States and the American working men and women. Congressman Banks, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to pop back to you momentarily. Really want to thank you for your service. I love anybody, even Mayor Pete, anybody who volunteers to go in the service and go to Afghanistan and go to Iraq is a guy that you got to pay attention to. Okay, I want to do a quick reset, guys, before we turn to Congressman Banks. Where are we and why are we here?
Jason, first, before we get to the substance of it, I just want to remind people that in addition to having this show live on your radios or if you're at warroom.org, wherever you're consuming this, you can also get it on podcast at iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and Spotify and SoundCloud. It's on YouTube. It's everywhere, and we want to get this to as many people as humanly possible. It's quite some feat, and we'll lay the credit at Stephen K. Bannon's feet for this, to start a show 3 weeks ago and have it go national in that short period of time. And it's also because of the audience. The audience has been so engaged. The audience has been sharing this like wild. We've got an insane amount of five-star ratings and reviews and all of that.
Here's what we want. This is just not for grassroots partisans of the MAGA movement. We want this information out to independents and Democrats. We want people to listen to this, to weigh and measure. We think the mainstream media gives you one slant on it. We're trying to give you another. And what we focus on is not just the strategic. I've got two best guys in the world to do that. But also the granularity. We get into the substance. We deconstruct the testimony. We talk about who the witnesses are going to be. We talk about process. We follow process very closely here.
So why don't you tell us for a start why four weeks ago, that Sunday night, you called Jason and I.
Because on John Frederick's radio show, who was the only guy that came to the Radio Row in Trump Tower on the November 8th of 2016, we had one guy show up for Radio Row, John Fredericks. He's got a real feel for the base. I did the radio show and said, look, on a date certain, you know, Nancy Pelosi, this is 4 weeks into her, you know, master class in political disinformation warfare. She's going to call a vote to, you know, it's going to be abuse of power. It's going to be obstruction of Congress or obstruction of justice, two things of impeachment. And people said, "What? You didn't get the memo. You know, what's your problem?
This is fake news.
Fake news. A witch hunt. We have to get focused on the political process that's being run here in the media process. Regardless of what you think of the president, we know that we have many, many followers here and people here that have dedicated their lives now to this movement. But we have to be realistic about what is going on. And that's the thing of the show. Let's go to the reset and then we'll go to the congressman. Tell us, how do we get here, and where are we right now with these witnesses?
Well, okay, so we've seen this process take place now over the last 5 to 6 weeks in you know, in the real sense of an impeachment trial. You've had the private depositions, which Congress got together, the committee got together under Nancy Pelosi's purview, and they said, look, Adam Schiff is going to preside over these secret, what you call the star chamber trials that are taking place, the depositions taking place in the basement on Capitol Hill. So they summoned this plethora of witnesses, people who have served in the military, people who have served
essentially,
in the foreign
essentially
service.
Essentially, their thesis is arms for dirt. This is an arms deal that was held up to get dirt on the Bidens, a political opponent. Their elevator pitch is very succinct.
And they've gone in with a set mantra, a set narrative. Now, they can change that a little bit here and there, like we see them pivoting over the last week or so. But predominantly, what we're talking about here is the Democrat committee calling in witnesses. They have been auditioning them in private.
In the Star Chamber.
In the Star Chamber. Yeah. Which you know, there was a fever that week. People didn't know what to do. On the Republican side, people didn't know what to do with that. And then Matt Gaetz, congressman from Florida, got together a whole group of congressmen and effectively stormed the skiff, said, we're not having this, where the American public
wasn't quite Bastille Day, but it was close. Right? it broke the fever.
Less bloodshed.
Yeah, so where we are right now is this is the second week of public testimony.
This is the Moscow show trial. So we've gone from start. We have Star Chamber still running, though, because they're still doing auditions downstairs. We'll talk about this weekend. They're doing auditions, but they got the Moscow show trials upstairs.
Yeah, and so this second week of public testimonies, and really what folks need to know is this week is all about the buildup to Gordon Sondland. He's the U.S. ambassador to the EU. The Democrats are essentially an obstruction charge in search of a crime. I mean, they don't have anything. There is no obstruction. We had the great David Rivkin on yesterday who deconstructed all of these ridiculous legal attacks from obstruction to extortion to bribery. It's like a roulette wheel of legal allegations that they're throwing out there. So here's what we have this week. This is what you're going to be seeing on your TVs. Tomorrow morning, they open up at 9 a.m. There's a panel with Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who, and this is the difference between, as
in full military uniform.
Full military uniform. This is
Bronze
the difference
Star awardee.
Between the closed door hearings and the public.
Heart.
We're going to see Vindman essentially being cross-examined by Republicans. We're going to see, get away from just the still shots, we're going to see how he performs when he has to answer for some of these discrepancies. We're going to also hear tomorrow morning from Jennifer Williams, the Foreign Service aide to Vice President Pence. Then tomorrow afternoon, we're going to hear two folks that Republicans...
She's already being lit up by the president.
Yeah, like a Christmas tree. Tomorrow afternoon, starting at 2:30, two folks that Republicans wanted called, Kurt Volker, the special envoy to Ukraine, and then also Tim Morrison, the former NSC aide.
Critical. And he took Fiona Hill. He relieved Fiona Hill. He's got her billet. It's interesting. She's coming at the end of the week to put the – she's going to wrap the bow around the Moscow show trial. Okay. But we're going to come back to
all
this.
And then Wednesday is Sondland. Wednesday is the big day.
It's game day. That's game day.
There's Sondland's everything. There's a lot to catch up on. People need to do themselves the favor and go back and listen to every single episode we've done.
And also go to warroom.org. Raheem Kassam's running the master site here that consolidates everything. We put up pro-Trump articles, you know, anti-Trump articles. You get a real sense of, you know, the bid and the ask here, and that's what's important. I want to turn to Congressman Banks before we got to take a short commercial break. The front pages of every major newspaper in the world today, Financial Times of London, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, is all Hong Kong on fire. You've been the lead. Is there an opportunity? We got about a minute here. What's the opportunity cost you see? This city's engulfed in not this fire. This city's engulfed in a forced constitutional crisis by Nancy Pelosi. Where do we stand as far as the opportunity cost of this?
It's almost by design, Steve. As Washington, D.C., as the Beltway is focused on the impeachment sham, the rest of America, I believe, is focused on what's going on around the world. Each of these photos on the front pages of all of the major newspapers should forecast to the American people what China wants to do to the United States of America is exactly what they're doing.
We're going to come back with Congressman Jim Banks and the team. We're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return with War Room Impeachment and talk about the sham process that Congressman Banks just laid out. We will return in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back. War Room Impeachment, live from the Breitbart Embassy, the basement where we have the War Room and have our now studio, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. We have some breaking news. Congressman Jim Banks from Indiana. We're live 7 days a week. It's Monday, the 18th of November. Raheem, we have some breaking news courtesy of the President of the United States.
Yes, this morning the President has responded to Nancy Pelosi's appearances on television this weekend. He says, and I quote, our crazy...
Well, hang on for a second. Let's talk about her. She threw down on him.
She did.
She said, hey, if you don't like the process, if you're tweeting during live testimony, why don't you come on up and we'll give you as much time as you want. You can testify.
Yes. She said that on Face the Nation. And he responds, our crazy do-nothing, brackets, where's USMCA infrastructure, lower drug pricing, and more, end brackets. Speaker of the House, nervous Nancy Pelosi, who is petrified by her radical left, knowing she will soon be gone, brackets, they and fake news media are her boss, end brackets, suggested on Sunday's Deface the Nation, in all caps, that I testify about the phony impeachment witch hunt. She also said I could do it in writing, even though I did nothing wrong and don't like giving credibility to this no-do process hoax. I like the idea and will, in order to get Congress focused again, strongly consider it.
Is he listening to the show? He just summed up the entire first 20 minutes. Okay, let's go to what the president said. He talked about opportunity cost, right? He talked about, opioids, drug pricing. We've got USMCA. You've just been back in Indiana. You called this a sham process, so you threw down. Walk us through the sham process. Why do you think so? And what people in Indiana are telling you?
Well, Hoosiers see through it. 100%, Steve. They know that this is all a ruse by the left to defeat a president. This is unprecedented. A sitting president who's about to run for re-election, where one party, the opposing party of the president, is using the impeachment process as a weapon against a sitting president who's about to run for re-election. That Hoosiers have we're known for our common sense. My constituents are wise people. Rural America, a lot of farmers, a lot of working class. People like my folks, they see it for what it is. I mean, it's intuitively, they see that this is all designed to injure the president. And that's what's so disappointing about it. I contend that there's nowhere in America that will benefit as much from Northeast Indiana as what we will when we pass the USMCA.
In Congress, why is this held up right now? Why is USMCA, and it's like in the witness protection program, you're not hearing anything about it. How central is that to your district, and why is Nancy Pelosi sitting on it?
My district has the most manufacturing jobs per capita of any district in the country. It's also very rural. So every time I go home, USMCA it's not in the weeds. It's on the minds and the tongues of my constituents at town hall meetings everywhere I go, because farmers know it opens up better trade opportunities with Canada and Mexico, and workers all of the major manufacturing companies in my district knows that they can pay they'll be able to pay their workers more, they'll be able to create more good paying jobs.
Plus, strategically, it was always set up to be the geostrategic manufacturing base to oppose China. The president would have had more leverage in the China negotiations if the House had moved quicker.
That's exactly right, and that's why Pelosi is holding it up. It is such a big win for this president that she cannot afford politically to allow it to come for
in your town halls. What did people tell you when you were there?
Well, in the last couple of weeks, I said it jokingly, but it's absolutely 100% true. The more people brought up Epstein and whether or not Epstein was murdered, then people said, hey, the president should be impeached. It's absolutely true.
Wow.
Because they know, they know intuitively that this is a political process that is designed by one party to defeat the other.
Okay, I want to go back to Jason Miller for a second. Thank you, Congressman. The president is he's, as you know, a McLuhan-esque figure. You and I would have not arguments, we'd have discussions with him all the time. Invariably, he was right and we were wrong, right, about his ideas about how you change the narrative, how you change the arc of a discussion. For our audience, given what's happened over the weekend, and particularly what happened in the first time in history, media-wise, you had a live tweet on testimony on Friday that was brought in by the chairman and changed the whole dynamic of that social media intruding into broadcast television. It's never happened before. What is the president doing here, Jason Miller?
So what the president's doing is reminding the American public that he is the most transparent president in U.S. history. Do you want why I say that? Because you know what he's thinking because he tweets it right when the thought crosses into his mind. So we know what he's thinking at all times. But here's what he's doing to folks. He's laying it out there that he's an open book. That he doesn't have anything to hide. That he would love to come and talk to people.
By the way, that's part of the Mueller thing. It was 5,000, with subpoena, 500 witnesses, $40 million. He told everybody in the White House staff, you got to go up there. Give them everything, talk to everything, be totally transparent.
Yeah, and so even to our conversations, say, about Gordon Sondland and the big crash that we're going to see coming up on Wednesday, where I think both sides are probably going to be whacking him, you know that President Trump's going to want Sondland to go up there and clean it up and fix it. Trump does not like the appearance that something is being hidden. That he's doing something.
Because if we said the more substance, and that's what he kept saying, unity and substance, the more granular you get in here, the more you understand this is a policy debate between people that have that permanent political class mentality. They may be patriots. They may think they're serving the country, but he's commander-in-chief. He won the 16 election. You can't undo that election. We can't allow that election to be undone for the good of the country.
But this goes to the point that we talked about the other day, in that take everything you know about conventional politics and turn it upside down. I mean, no one would say, Mr. President, why don't you go and tweet out that you'd be more than happy to go talk to Pelosi and the Democrats and Schiff on Capitol Hill. They'd start screaming. I'm sure Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, is probably, his hair is probably on fire as he's run up and down the halls of the White House. Trump's like, look, I'm an open book. Now, ultimately, do I see President Trump ending up going in? No, because Pelosi and Schiff and the rest of the Democrats will screw it up and make it clear that they're out to just chop him up and he wouldn't be given his moment. But he's turning this. He's the master of political jujitsu. He's turning around on Pelosi.
He's turning around Pelosi, but also from her interview yesterday, and Raheem jumping on, we'll go to Congressman Banks first. From her interview yesterday, she threw down to draw him out. Now it's those two. Before, it's been Schiff. You got Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan. You have other characters. You've got the grassroots. You've got this show. You've got other things. But now, in highlight in the last 24 hours, it's the president versus the Speaker of the House. This is constitutionally important for us, but these are also two larger-than-life personalities.
Steve, I like to say this is a make it up as you go process, right? There's no structure to it. It doesn't make sense to people back home because it doesn't make sense at all. So that means that we have to adapt. Every time they make a move, we have to make a move. That's why I give the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, a lot of credit for taking his chief rival who ran against him for minority leader, Jim Jordan, and put him on the impeachment committee, the intelligence committee. We need to do more of that. I know McCarthy is and his war room are every day getting together. We talked about Lee Zeldin a little bit ago off the air. I mean, guys like that, the smartest guys in our conference that are fighting back not just every day, but all day, even on the weekends. They're in the room and looking at ways that we can adapt to the Democrats' strategy.
How big do you think it is now Pelosi versus the president directly?
Well, it's really big because we will always win that fight. Right.
Why is that? I love this. Why is that?
Because the middle of America, the heartland of America, will always choose this president over a flawed figure like Nancy Pelosi.
San Francisco progressive versus a guy who speaks the vernacular of the working class people. Raheem, how big is this? He threw down on Pelosi today, came back.
Yeah, I think it reframes the whole thing. And I think also because he may have realized that actually just attacking sort of Yovanovitch as he did last week and Williams as he did the weekend, it's not about them. It's about who's at the top of this
Amen.
Thing. And it's Nancy Pelosi all over.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. You're listening to War Room Impeachment. This is episode 34. We're live on the John Frederick Radio Network and now picked up nationwide by Salem Broadcasting, also streaming on America's Voice.news. This is Stephen K. Bannon. We're going to pay a few bills. Return with Congressman Jim Banks from Indiana, Raheem Kassam, and Jason Miller, my wingman, momentarily.
War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back, live at the Breitbart Embassy in the War Room. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, honored to be joined by Congressman Jim Banks from Indiana 3, the great heartland of this country, and a district that's quite unusual. It's a rural district with the highest per capita manufacturing of folks in this nation. So he's shouldn't be surprised. Not only is he a supporter of Donald Trump, and he's also understands the great threat of the Chinese Communist Party. This is not about China. This is not about the Chinese people. They're the most decent, hardworking people on earth. And if you want to see patriots like 1776, just go to your newspapers today. This is a story that should have been covered wall-to-wall starting back in June. You have young people at Polytechnic University that are surrounded using bows and arrows and Molotov cocktails to keep off the People's Liberation Army. And I tell you, Hong Kong stands, and if you think that millennials don't get it, look at those young men and women under 30 on the streets fighting for the rule of law, fighting for freedom, fighting for free market capitalism. So if you've lost, you know, in our country, 70% of the kids want socialism. That's because this capitalist model driven by Wall Street and global corporations is not quite working. And that is the beating heart of the Trump revolution. And that is what they're trying to stop. They're trying to blunt the arc of this revolution, this movement of Donald Trump in this impeachment process. I want to go to Jason Miller on our return.
Congressman, news out this morning that American Action Network is up with a $7 million TV buy in 37 districts, also pushing Democrats to get back to the business that they were elected to do, get away from this impeachment witch hunt. Also have a really good op-ed that's out on FoxNews.com from our friend Andy Biggs from Arizona, as well as Jody Heiss from Georgia, talking about how Democrats like Peterson and Van Drew are the ones who are smart, and more Democrats need to be thinking about getting back to the business at hand. What do you think our prospects are of getting more Democrats to abandon Pelosi and move away from this impeachment push?
Well, that's a good question, Jason. At this point, they're all backed into a corner. I mean, they're all going to follow their leader wherever she takes them. And I contend that she's going to walk them off the cliff. I mean, electorally, throughout the country, you look at the matchups and the tough battleground districts, and we have Republicans who are leading Democrats in head-to-head matchups all over the country. You have a political background. You know what that means at this point in the game, even in the state of California, where we lost a whole slew of races last time that were a big part of the recipe for losing the majority last time. That's the recipe for winning it back this time. David Valadao, who's a former member who's in a very Democrat district, is leading his Democrat opponent by a few points. Young Kim, who ran last time, who lost, she's up on her opponent. You see that throughout California, but you see it all over the country. And the only reason that you see that at this point is because impeachment is playing so poorly throughout the country in these battleground districts.
Because people want Congress focused on USMCA, on prescription drugs, on infrastructure, on the business at hand for the United States.
They see where the Democrats in the House are leading. And that's not where they want the country to go. So I'm as optimistic on winning back the majority as I've ever been. I wasn't optimistic until a few months ago, but the numbers speak for themselves. All of the major news outlets like to put out polling head-to-head on whether or not the American people support impeachment. Depending on how you write that question, the numbers end up differently. But when you look at battleground states and battleground districts, impeachment is almost always unpopular, and those are the districts that we have to win back the majority.
Well, let's talk about you come from Indiana. What's your relationship with Mayor Pete? We only got a couple minutes, and if we need to, we'll come back over the break on this. But what's your relationship with Mayor Pete?
Yeah, I know him a little bit. We were both young political leaders in the state, in the northern part of the state. He is mayor of South Bend, me as a state senator at the time in northeast Indiana. We also both coincidentally joined the United States Navy Reserve at exactly the same time. He's an intelligence officer.
Why did you volunteer?
Both my grandfathers served. My brother served in the Air Force. My dad didn't serve, but he always regretted it. And I got to 30, 31 years old, was desperate to do something, to feel like I did my part as part of the post 9/11 generation. So I was inspired to do it. I applied 5-6 times I got turned down by the Navy, and before I was finally commissioned as a supply corps officer, that was one of the happiest days of my life.
You applied 5 or 6 times before you got in. Okay, look, we got to take another short commercial break. I'm on track here, right, to my producer. Okay, take another short commercial break. And when we return, I want to drill down a little bit more on your naval service and you volunteered. Stephen K. Bannon, War Room Impeachment. Here live in the Breitbart Embassy on the Salem Radio Network, live on the John Fredericks Radio Network. I have Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. Raheem and Jason are the two best guys in the world to run a war room. One ran it for UKIP and for the Brexit, Raheem in London, and Jason Miller was the comms director for Donald J. Trump. We're going to take a short commercial break, pay a few bills. We'll return with Congressman Jim Banks from Indiana.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to the War Room. We are also picked up on the Salem Radio Network, and we are streaming live on americasvoice.news and many other independent stations around the nation. We'll get to those. I want to get back to Congressman Jim Banks because I admire someone, you know, later at the late 20s, early 30s, that because of their patriotism and also because of their family – feel that they need in a war, and we're in a war, a shooting war, feel you have to volunteer. Let's go back to 5 times you tried, you were turned down, you kept at it. Why?
Well, the Navy kept telling me that I went through a competitive process called the direct commission officer process, and it's unique in the Navy that lures or recruits older candidates, older being 20s, early 30s, I think 35 was the cutoff age, who have some background or experience. And at the time, I worked for a construction company. I worked in commercial real estate. I didn't have an MBA, so they encouraged me to get my MBA. And finally, I was a state senator at the time, and I got picked up after I started my MBA. At the same time, Mayor Buttigieg, as we talked about, he was commissioned, and our paths crossed. We both went to Afghanistan around the same time and served there. But there was a third figure involved in all of this. Hunter Biden was commissioned around the same time too. Now, Steve, I don't come from wealth. I don't come from prestige. My dad made axles all of his life at a factory in Fort Wayne, Indiana. My mom was a cook. My mom was a cook in a nursing home. My dad hated politics and politicians. He loved two political figures in my lifetime. One was Ross Perot, and the other one was Donald Trump. My brother and I were both elected on the same night. Me to Congress. My brother was elected to a county office. My dad was a lot more excited about Donald Trump being elected to president on the same election night. So that's where we come from. I don't have a powerful dad, but Hunter Biden did. Hunter Biden got a waiver at the same time that I was commissioned and turned down 5 or 6 times. He got a waiver because his dad was vice president because he exceeded the age limitation. He then failed a drug test, but he received another waiver to stay in the Navy after he failed a drug test.
How do you, given the problem we've got in the service with drugs, particularly in places like in country like Afghanistan and Iraq, and also in the fleet where I came out of, and these combatants, how does a guy get a waiver for failing a drug test? That is like the kill shot. I mean, even the White House, you remember, in the White House, you failed the drug test, your perp walked off that moment.
It's extraordinary to get an age waiver. But he got a drug waiver after he failed a drug test. It wasn't until he failed a repetitive drug test.
Wait, so he failed Navy two?
Yeah, at least. I mean, I believe there's a New York Times story that digs deeply into these issues. So there's nothing, Steve, that angers me more than those with the last name of Biden or Clinton that get special treatment in this country.
That's the permanent political class between. Isn't this the thing about what's happening in Ukraine? Because it's what President Trump's talking about in corruption. Ukraine's the Guardian says most corrupt nation in Europe. Ernst & Young says the top 3 most corrupt nations in the world, which is a pretty low standard. But in the Bidens, you see the crony capitalism that's destroyed this country. This is the managed decline of America, is the crony capitalist, this aristocracy that runs Washington D.C. and passes it down generation to generation. They're not from guys whose dad built axles.
That's right. When this Ukraine story broke and Hunter Biden was a central figure, I wasn't surprised. It was before Hunter Biden was a household name, but I did what I occasionally do. I popped off on Twitter and told my story, and you can find that on my Twitter feed. But
what's the Twitter feed? Raheem, I want to make sure that we make this famous. We make Hunter Biden famous today.
At
Rep. Jim Banks. Naval career.
And we'll tweet perhaps more about that. But this is why.
But if you want to see those tweets, I just re-upped all of them from your account, so many more people.
But didn't he, we got time strains here, but didn't he get bounced out of the Navy very quickly for a drug problem?
Not quickly enough, but eventually the Navy got to a point where they understood the optics of his of him being in the Navy to begin with and being allowed to stay because he is the son of the sitting vice president. This is the same story that now has emerged in this Ukraine narrative, right? I mean, the corruption of him being on the board of a company in Ukraine, that's why I believe that Hunter Biden should be called to testify before the committees.
You agree when they put him on the list? You think that Biden should be? And I like to take on the Maria Bartiromo show. It was the first one to call out that the senator or the vice president Biden and his son should come to testify. But do you think the Biden son should come to testify?
He's a central figure from the beginning of this story. Hunter Biden is the key central figure that not just for show, he knows facts involved in all of this that show why the president is on the right side of calling for investigations.
Does that make it too much of a circus?
No, absolutely not. And it's very important, I think, Congressman, that people do know. I mean, I see Hunter Biden as the middle of the story, actually. I mean, the start of the story, remember, goes to 2012, 2013, the association agreement between the EU and the Ukraine. But where it really starts to become pertinent for Americans, for American national security, as we heard earlier this week from Marie Yovanovitch, when Congresswoman Stefanik needled her over that point, when Hunter Biden starts working for Burisma for $50,000 a month, that's when it becomes pertinent to U.S. national security. You hear a lot, don't you, about how this president is endangering U.S. national security, is enriching himself off the office. Isn't that the case for the Biden family?
No doubt about it. I mean, if that's not corruption, I don't know what corruption is.
And by the way, the same thing, too, is this is the heart of the Chinese story. 2013, the Munich of the 21st century is allowing those permanent, those temporary islands built in the South China Sea to be militarized. Biden was in charge of this. He went in 2013. Hunter went with him on Air Force Two. He had private meetings. Eventually, they got $1.5 billion into the private equity funds. He has no expertise in that. Right, like he had no expertise in the Navy. His father has forced him into this. Then Biden comes back in the Rose Garden. Okay, she comes over. They sign an arrangement with Obama that Biden's supposed to be in charge of on cyber intrusions and non-militarization of the South China Sea. 6 months later, this is Joe Biden's on watch. 6 months later, increase in cyber intrusions, and they've totally militarized the South China Sea. And as a young man who used to patrol that, I keep saying, if this economic war ever goes to a kinetic war, it will start in the South China Sea because of those islands. That's the Munich. That's Joe Biden. That's his son. This is the permanent political class and the crony capitalism and corruption that has made districts like yours. People sit there and go, I want a Donald Trump. I want somebody in the room represent me. I'm tired of these phonies, and I'm tired of their kids getting payoffs. I'm tired of them making money. This is ridiculous.
And that's what's on trial here is the America first
right there.
Foreign policy. What's on trial is not the president himself. It's the people who elected the president and why they elected him.
They don't want a voice in the room. Okay, you got to take another short commercial break. Return with Raheem, Jason, and Congressman Banks here momentarily on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back. Also on the Salem Radio Network and America's Voice.news, Stephen K. Bannon here live in the Breitbart Embassy, in the basement, in the war room, and now in our studio. Congressman Banks, Congressman, I wanted to draft off Raheem's. Is Raheem right? Is that what this impeachment, the meta narrative is America first and what Trump represents versus Nancy Pelosi and this kind of, as she's been pulled to this more radicalized version of the of the Democratic Party?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a mistake that every single presidential candidate on the Democrat side on the debate stage has dismissed China as a threat. I mean, you've heard everything from this being a fool's errand to go after China to Joe Biden sort of laughing and saying that's ridiculous.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Why would we Why would we go after China? I always say President Trump is the first president of my lifetime to tackle the greatest existential threat that America faces today, and that's China. So if President Trump was soft on China, I don't think we would be in, I don't think there would be an impeachment sham process unfolding today. If he were pro-abortion, I don't think we would be attempting to impeach him. If he wasn't stacking the courts with pro-life, constitutionally minded judges, I don't think the energy among the Democrats would be there to impeach him. So I could keep going on and on with a long laundry list of what the of where this president has been effective in his 3 years so far in office. But if it weren't for that, I don't think we would be attempting to impeach
him. This whole concept comes down, as Congressman Banks talked about these Democrats in these districts. These districts, you've been making them famous since we started, four or five of them so far. We have another congressman to make famous, and we know now that money is – ordinance is going to go on top of those districts.
Yes, so we have $7 million coming into 37 districts from American Action Network. Put some heat on this. And why are we doing it? Because very simply, these 31 Democratic freshmen and Republican districts that President Trump won in 2016, that's why we have Nancy Pelosi. That's why we have the impeachment. If Nancy Pelosi and these freshman Democrats weren't there, then we wouldn't have this nonsense. So today's feature is Alyssa Slotkin, Democratic Congresswoman from Michigan's 8th Congressional District in the Lansing area, former CIA analyst, DOD official. This is a district that President Trump won with 56% of the vote in 2016, but then Slotkin comes in and beats Republican Congressman Mike Bishop with 50.6. So we need folks to call her office. DC office is 202-225-4872. Again, that's Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan, Democrat freshman, 202-225-4872. And tell her we're sick and tired of you spending all this time on impeachment. Focus on USMCA and things that matter.
Raheem, we're going to have an evening show tonight, 6 o'clock, to summarize more. But tell our folks now what's in store for tomorrow.
Yeah, and to those listening on the Salem Network at 9 p.m., make sure you go back and listen to both shows from each day. It's a big week on Capitol Hill. Jennifer Williams, Alex Vindman, Kurt Volker, Tim Morrison, Gordon Sondland, Laura Cooper, David Hale, Fiona Hill. If you want to get familiar with all those names and why they matter, Warum.org. We've got bios on all of them.
Okay, Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. Honored today to be joined by a congressman from Indiana 3, Congressman Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, you're a good man, I got
to
tell you.
Great to be with you. Navy, come back.
The Navy picks him well, and he's from a district that's the heartland of this country. Okay, tonight at 6, we will have another episode to tee up tomorrow, and then live tomorrow at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the Breitbart Embassy. It will be War Room Impeachment. Until tomorrow, we'll see you.